What is this? Why? Linoleum knife. Linoleum knife.
That was the
Carol. What is. How long was that supposed to go on for?
I was trying to tell you, you could cut it whenever you wanted.
Was there going to be singing
soon? No. It was just like. It was the.
What is this?
It's the Carpenter's version of Carol of the Bells, but it's
not the Carpenter's version of anything if the Carpenter lady isn't singing it.
God.
What a terrible choice.
Why?
Put on, like. Merry Christmas, darling.
I almost
and let me hear that beautiful, sad, dead woman singing.
You are enraged. Do you want to start over?
No.
Jeez.
Yes. No.
Gosh. You're not being very Christmassy right now.
I look, I'm trying to keep you from doing terrible Christmas things. That was a terrible Christmas thing.
You're a terrible Christmas
Oh, but what about the Sweeney sisters singing the Jolts? Carol of the Bells?
I don't have that on cassette.
So many other options you had. How many podcasts until Christmas? This one, another one, then a different one. And there's like maybe one more?
Yes.
Four
yes.
podcasts until Christmas? Mm-hmm. And you squandered your opening music on that. The Carpenters who are not singing. Richard Carpenter just going on his piano and multiple synthesizers. And Karen being like, okay, I'll just go take a little break and have some iced tea. You're wrong for doing that.
Your fury is frightening me right
I'm
now.
I'm not infuriated. I'm not angry. I'm simply disappointed. Let's talk about what this podcast is.
Why don't we do that?
This is a podcast about movies, where
about the cinema. some might say
the man who chose. Badly, the opening theme music is Alonso Duralde, who is the film critic of the you're the main film critic of the Wrap. You're the film editor at thewrap.com.
Yes.
You are the film editor at thewrap.com.
I'm the review editor.
Other people who you're the reviews editor at thewrap.com.
Or something. I don't
Whatever
know.
It
I
is,
have a title editor.
You're something you're a kind of editor at thewrap.com.
Yes, yes.
And other people review things there.
Yes.
But they report to you. You're Charlie, and they're the angels.
I'm maybe Bosley at best in this scenario, but...
No. Bosley was all right. Also, you do What the Flick,
right.
Which is a television program on YouTube.
Correct.
With three other people mm-hmm. who, as we discussed last week...
And the film critic...
Are...
I chose
One
badly.
Of them is the Beyoncé, and the two others are the other two Destiny's yeah, children.
The film critic...
Did you explain this to them last when you saw them?
I have recently? Not seen them since then, because we didn't do a show this week, because
right.
of the Thanksgiving.
And okay, and then...
The film critic I chose badly is Dave White of Movies.com, who was also a contributor to Unfictional
the
on
The film
KCRW.
Critic you chose badly?
Yes.
What are you talking about?
I married somebody who's getting all mad about the Carpenters.
You married someone.
Big mistake.
Listen, I'll tell you who you married. You married the person who helps keep you in check. That's what you needed.
Yeah, I needed that.
And magically it came along. Like Love Actually.
Yeah. Okay. So we're capping off our Thanksgiving holiday weekend.
We just got off a plane like 3 hours ago.
Which is why we're probably a little punchy today.
I feel gross. Mm-hmm. I've been on a plane. Mm-hmm. They're dirty. Planes are extremely dirty. I sat in front of the Omen.
Yes.
This 4-year-old that would not stop kicking my seat. And his mother, who knew it was happening and scolded and screeched at him during the entire flight...
Ineffectually.
She did not make him stop. She just kept saying, there's a person sitting in front of you. And he's like, who? Like, I'll show you who. this monster.
If I'd heard that, I would turn around and said, that's Dave White of Movies.com.
Of Movies.com and Linoleum
and
Knife.
And the Linoleum Knife podcast. Fame. That Dave White.
Perhaps you've heard him on KCRW's Unfictional, where he can also be occasionally heard.
He's the one that sounds like a cartoon dog.
Yes, cartoon dog. The one that sounds like a cartoon dog. That's who you're kicking right now, you little turd. I didn't say anything, though. I kept it chill. I was not a Twitter person who...
You did not send a bottle of wine.
Send
to
a
the
bottle
kid.
Of wine and angry notes to the people behind me.
It's amazing the rapid backlash of that. This is a thing that went up. We're recording this on Saturday, December 30th. So on Friday afternoon, evening, this sort of Twitter war went up between this guy who's a producer on The Bachelor, and this woman who...
Oh, really?
Yes. And this woman who was pitching a fit...
Well, that would all make sense.
This woman who was pitching a fit on a plane, and he started having these sort of, like, passive-aggressive battle where he was sending her notes and alcohol, and then
and
after...
documenting all of it
and
on Twitter.
And tweeting the whole thing, and then afterwards she slapped him in the airport, and it was a whole magilla. So first it was like, yeah, this is great, and then it was like, yeah, actually, he was kind of not cool to the woman who might have been having a freak out, and he did so in a very weirdly sexist way, to now it's, I bet this never happened.
It might have never happened, but if it did happen, even though she was, you know, really in the wrong for all the things she did.
Yeah, she was yelling at the flight attendants about how she needed to land on time because she was traveling for Thanksgiving, like nobody else on the plane was.
I can't. I have such extreme flying anxiety that people who are melting down on a plane...
Immediately have your sympathy.
They immediately have my sympathy. I mean, even if they're being really bad, I know that sounds wrong because people who behave badly should be confronted about it.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't there, so I don't know if she was being run-of-the-mill LA.
Entitled crazy,
or if she was being, I'm having a freaking panic attack meltdown crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know.
Yeah.
And because you don't know, the first choice I don't think should be, you know, let me attack you and ridicule you publicly so that I can look cool on Twitter. And because that's really where this came from. This is on Twitter. When you put things on Twitter, you are entering the sentence contest. Because that's really all you can do on Twitter is write a sentence or two.
Right.
And your job is to entertain your Twitter followers.
It favors the epigrammatic.
It is a sentence contest.
Yeah.
And so if you're doing it, if you're live tweeting an event, you're trying to get people to be entertained.
Yeah,
you're trying to get followers and build up your own, you know, Twitter brand. And so,
We've all been there.
I have a problem just on its face with this sort of like, oh look, these people are breaking up 10 feet away from me on a roof. I'm gonna tweet about it.
That was a little weird.
And I. You know,
I mean, it's one thing if it's
as a writer whose work is not simply film reviews, but who goes on National Public Radio and tells personal stories about things that I have experienced. Believe me, I'm always eavesdropping.
Yeah,
I'm always eavesdropping. I am always listening to folks. I'm always watching where things are going. I'm always taking notes.
But I don't live tweet
these things. I take them home. I think about them. I organize them. I decide if they're worth writing about or if they're appropriate to write about. This guy didn't know that.
It's one thing if it's that website overheard in New York where it's, you know, people...
Completely anonymous.
It's people on a subway. You
right.
Know, they're out in public. But if it's a couple...
And they're just saying goofy stuff. It's just saying goofy stuff on overheard in public.
If it's a couple breaking up on a rooftop and you're listening to them through a window, that's a little sketchier.
Right. No, he was standing nearby, actually. He was up on the roof.
Oh, he was on the roof, too.
Yeah. Okay. Tweeting. He was up on the roof tweeting. Finally, they noticed him. They're like, that guy's over there texting something. Let's get out of here. So, anyway, I'm a panicky flyer, and I've never, you know, had a meltdown where I abused people verbally, but I've been pretty, you know, unhappy on flights before, to the point where flight attendants have taken notice of me and have come to me and said, one of the best moments that I ever had was an older lady who was really kind, and she saw this look of like, on my face, and she said, "Is there something wrong?" And I said, "I'm afraid to fly." And she put her hand on my shoulder, and she said, "It'll be okay." And she goes, "I'm going to check on you during the flight." I thought I was going to burst into tears when she did this, because I was like, "You don't be nice to me. I'm having a freak out."
You've gotten much better.
I have.
Much better.
I was awake during the flight today. No Xanax.
Yeah, you weren't drugged up, and there was no way you were going to sleep through that turbulence we had.
Right, and this terrible turbulence. I white-knuckled that, though. I grabbed a seat. You were sitting right in front of me. Yeah. Window seat right in front of me. I grabbed the...
I thought you did. I couldn't tell at one point.
I did. The woman next to me was like, what's he doing? Like, she looks over at me like, what's going on with you? I was like, I'm just scared. Leave me alone. I'm not going to yell at anyone or
eat your face.
Yeah. You know. What were we? Oh yeah. So now we're home and we're super ready to podcast.
Woo! I'm just, you know, when people just get gross on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, I'm just reminded of the opening line from the Adult Swim show C-Lab 2021, where the teacher says, "Who can tell me what the internet was and how it almost destroyed the Earth in 2015?"
Right.
It's just
Yes.
But hey, it's thanks to the internet that we can share this program.
You get us because of the internet.
Right,
because of the internet. You get to read our movie reviews because of the internet. And we have jobs because of the internet. And our job this week, we had to review Frozen, which we talked about
last
podcast. So right. We're not talking about Frozen this week.
We still like it.
Yeah, our opinion has not changed about Frozen. Let's talk about the one first that nobody went to see.
Would that be Old Boy?
Old Boy.
Yes. Well, which barely got... I mean, they were opened on 500
screens.
That's
barely a wide release.
Yeah, that's like...
That's like the base level of wide
release. Yeah, it's not a small enough release to be, oh, well, you know, we're going to expand out after the reviews hit. And it's certainly not a big, we have confidence in this release.
That's movies.com's baseline of, we want you to cover this.
500 screens?
Yeah. Ish. Sometimes, if it's like a 400 screener or 300, I might still do it.
Right.
But I might not.
I'm
like, I wound up not writing about I'm in love with a church girl for the site. I just was like, eh. I talked about it on the show.
Right.
I'm done. It opened on like 400 screens.
Did you get an angry letter from executive producer God?
Funny thing about God, does not write handwritten letters to people.
No.
Anymore. And so nobody, you know, Ja Rule didn't bother me. Like, I said something about Ja Rule on Twitter. Speaking of Twitter. And, you know, he didn't even bother to respond. Yeah. And he's not that busy. He's not an incredibly busy man.
I don't think so.
So
Old Boy, you know, it's funny. This is one of those movies that I'm kind of glad that I didn't have to review in print, because I'm not entirely sure what I think about it, only because... I had never gotten around to seeing the original one, and so I watched it on Netflix the night before I watched the Spike Lee version.
That's a good way to do it, I think. It's an interesting way to do it.
It's not, because at this point, I kind of wish I had gone into the Spike Lee one totally cold and not known any of the shocking revelations, you know, or twists or whatever, and just taken it at its face to say, well, I didn't see the first one, but, you know, this kind of works, or this is still stupid, or whatever. But having seen the original one, which is pretty cool, and, you know, gripping and interesting and unpredictable, the remake just felt like a weird, not quite there thing, and certain things didn't translate, and other things felt like just sort of slavish copying, and then other ideas where they change stuff. They didn't change it very well, and I'm not down for this. It didn't. I mean, and again, I was seeing it fresh off of having watched the Park Chan-wook version for the first time, so it was very fresh in my memory.
Wook.
And this just didn't. This seemed. You know, it didn't even seem like a Spike Lee movie. Apparently, it's the first narrative Spike Lee movie that does not say a Spike Lee joint.
Oh, really?
I guess because he didn't write it.
I didn't know. Well, yeah,
oh, no, but true. He didn't write Crooklyn either. So I don't know what that's about. But
he didn't write Crooklyn.
No, his brother and sister did.
Okay, well, that's still a Spike Lee joint.
But yeah, so this just felt
shown up.
Yeah, dig. I don't know if this was a work for hire thing. It didn't feel like this was a movie he was burning to make. In a way, I mean, even Inside Man, I thought kind of felt, you know, even though
Inside Man definitely felt like a Spike Lee film.
It did, even though it was very different from other films that he's made. This one's kind of a mess. What did you think?
Well, first we're going to tell people what it's about.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. So Josh Brolin plays an advertising exec who is a rotten, rotten person. He's an alcoholic, and he is an estranged husband and bad dad to a very young daughter, and blows a big deal by hitting on the client's wife, and then goes out on a bender and gets super drunk, and when he wakes up, he is inside a hotel room that he cannot escape, and he is fed through a slot in the door, and there are no windows, and he's kind of freaking out about it at first, and then he sees on TV that he's been framed for his wife's murder, and that his daughter has been adopted and has become like a child prodigy cellist, and so he decides to turn his life around because he wants to escape and reunite with his daughter and make things right again. So he stops drinking and he starts exercising to these weird like 80s videos that they show on the TV in his hotel room, and you know, plots his escape, and he's in the hotel room for 20 years.
15 in the original.
In the original movie, in the comic, in the Japanese manga on which both films were based, it was 10 years.
Ah, okay.
15 years in the Korean movie, 20 years in the Spike Lee version. And so he gets out and wakes up in a Louis Vuitton vintage trunk in the middle of a field, and then hooks up with a young doctor who helps him out, who first thinks that he's indigent or something, and he starts piecing together the clues to figuring out where he was. And the person who has imprisoned him all this time makes himself known, is played by Shoto Copley from District 9 and Elysium
and the A-Team.
You know, is clearly trying to get revenge on Josh Brolin, but Brolin has no idea why, and part of what Brolin has to do is figure out who this guy is and why he wants revenge on Josh Brolin.
Right. Meanwhile, Josh Brolin is getting revenge on
everybody else.
Everyone.
Yeah, and you know, all I can say is
super violence.
Right. But again, it's like Park Chan-wook did it better, you know.
Yeah,
it's all better in the original, I think.
This is a serviceable, competent, bare minimum sort of remake.
Mm-hmm.
It is Spike Lee stylish. It is extra gory, like the original.
Mm, I guess.
It's disturbing if you are if you don't know what's coming, it's pretty disturbing.
Yeah.
If you do know what's coming, not so much. And honestly, when I saw the original Old Boy, I was like, oh, that. And I thought, I should be more bothered by this.
I'm kind of the same way.
Because I've seen so much here's the thing. I've seen so many Takashi Miike films.
You really got to bring it at this point.
That really nothing bothers me anymore.
Yeah, no, I agree. It, you know.
And so, any gross, terrible thing, I was like, oh, yeah, okay, well, I've seen a movie that had that. Yeah,
somebody else in Asian cinema has already done it.
Yeah.
And they've done a watered-down version of it on American Horror Story at some
exactly.
point.
Yeah. So, I believe that this movie is fine. I won't be going back to look at it again.
Does it need to exist?
No. No, okay. No, it does not need to exist. If you can read, then you could have already seen the original film.
Yeah.
Or read the manga. And I don't even really want to talk about the manga because I don't ever want to compare the film version of something to the book version of something.
Yeah.
It's not relevant to me. As a film critic, I could do that forever and wind up losing my mind. When people, like, I remember when Ender's Game came out a little while back and failed, someone told me that they wish I had compared it to the book. And I said, no, that is what I will never do. My job is to write about the film. My job is not to tell you if it's good or bad compared to the book.
Yeah.
First of all, that would make me have to go read the book. And unless, you know, unless it's, you know, Rousseau's Confessions, the film, or
well, if you're doing Shakespeare,
or Madame Bovary, or whatever, you know, like, I'm not going to go read the book.
Yeah.
I don't have time to read books that aren't serious books. I'm serious.
I don't have time.
I'm serious about that. I don't have time for that stuff. I don't. I'm fixing to be 50 years old. I only have another 60 or 70 years left on Earth.
And your head in a jar will live on and on and on.
And so because of that, I have to fill my remaining 60 or 70 or 80 more years.
We'll get your head a Kindle.
When I finally die at age 132, I want to have said, I read all the good ones. I did not read Ender's Game, which I'm sure is great. You know, I'm sure it's a great sci-fi book.
It is pretty good.
But you can buy it at an airport.
Yeah.
And I'm not doing that, you know.
Well, that's a dumb standard.
No, it's not.
If you were in Heathrow, you could probably buy Pride and Prejudice at an airport.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Okay.
Have you seen the way bookstores are now?
When
you can buy, you can buy the first people you meet in heaven, or whatever that thing is called. You can buy that at the airport. There's a new book by that guy that I saw in the airport today.
Yeah, The First Phone Call from Heaven.
Something about heaven.
Yeah.
It's like, heaven is still real because I was six and I went there and I came back.
That's a different author.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. Those are the books.
Fat Boy Slim is in heaven.
Those are the books that you get in airports.
I bet you that whenever there's a movie of a Jane Austen book out, you can get that Jane Austen book at an airport.
All right. Fine.
No, I agree.
Still,
that,
going back to what I was talking about here. This movie can only be compared to the original.
You're right.
And the original was
a very widely seen film.
It was.
And the thing is, they haven't figured out. Here's the thing. Movie nerds saw that movie. Like, word got out. People knew to go see it. This version is in no way crafted or being marketed in a way to appeal to anyone who never knew that the original existed.
Right.
Like, the only people that are going to be remotely interested that there's an Old Boy remake are the people who saw Old Boy.
Yes.
And the people who saw Old Boy aren't going to like the Old Boy remake because they're the people who saw Old Boy.
Right. The original film was not just a revenge thriller. It was not just a gory mystery, got to get back at the bad guys movie. It was about human anguish. It was about, you know, how you lose your soul. It was, you know, about what are the depths of perversity and how far will you go into that to get the thing you think you need. Will it kill you?
Right.
Will it kill your insides? It might not kill your body, but will it kill your insides?
Will it destroy you?
To get that. And because of that, it was an art film. It was a genre film that was an art film. And kind of like, I don't think this is too exaggerated a thing to say. I think it's sort of a contemporary masterpiece.
No question.
It's one of the important films of the past decade.
Yeah.
And so it does things that, you know, that this film cannot do. This film cannot be mysterious like that film. This film cannot be morally ambiguous like that film because its audience needs something else. It's not weird like the first one. The first one has a weirdness that I sometimes can't even figure out to this day. And I think that has a lot to do with South Korean, you know, popular culture.
Sure.
Stuff that can't translate.
Right.
So.
But that was my thing. We talked about this week. Part of my issue with Stoker was this feels like a movie made by somebody who. This is an ESL movie. You know,
yeah.
And there are things in this movie that you could have totally gotten away with if you'd made this movie in Korea, in Korean, with Koreans. Yeah. But making it in America in English with Australians, it just comes off as, what?
Yeah.
At least that was my problem with it.
So, it's fine. I enjoyed myself while I watched it. It's entertaining, but it doesn't go deep like the first one. Now, here's something I just recently read. Like, as yesterday,
uh-huh.
I read this. Apparently, there's an extra hour.
Of Spike Lee's version?
Mm-hmm.
Of the, what?
Of this film that they made him cut.
But, I mean...
I want to see that. Because that might make all the difference.
No, certainly.
That might turn it into something wild.
I always give director's cuts the benefit of the doubt. Spike Lee doesn't get final cut anymore?
I think he got final cut on Red Hook Summer.
But, well, yeah, because he made it for 10 cents.
But, yeah, I just, you know, this...
Yeah, it just... Yeah, bottom line, this movie...
I would recommend that you see it after you see the original or before... I don't know, before you see the original? I don't know how to recommend it.
I don't know that...
Other than that, I think you should look at it because side by side, like watching the Seth Rogen... James Franco Bound 2 side by side with the Kanye
Bound
West
3.
Kim Kardashian Bound 2.
So basically you're not saying that people should see the Spike Lee movie. You're saying that people should see both movies as a point of comparison.
Yeah.
I guess.
And if you have never seen Old Boy and you never intend to see Old Boy and you just watch the Spike Lee version, you'll be like, all right, well that was gross and weird and kind of perverted and I don't know why, but it was a film that I saw, and it wasn't incompetently made.
Well, circling back to where I started with this, that I wasn't sure if it was the right idea to watch the original first, it's sort of like, I don't know that there's enough in this new one to justify its existence apart from being in English. I mean, I don't know what it brings to the table that's new and different and unique, and where you could say, oh, well, it's kind of blah, but at least there's these performances. And, I mean, the performances are fine. They do what they need to do, but there's no sort of standout great thing where you're like, oh, well, at least we got to see this. I don't know. I don't know that it needs to exist.
I would have liked to have seen it with Homefront's Jason Statham in the lead.
Well, sure.
Let's talk about Homefront and Jason Statham.
After that great segue, we totally should.
I'm good at segueing.
Very, yes. Why don't you explain what it's about?
Fighting.
My joke has been this is the Grindhouse version of Carnage because it all starts over a playground fight between two children.
It's about fighting. It's about fighting. It's a movie about fighting.
Yeah.
Bad people are after Jason Statham. He has to fight them.
Jason Statham plays Jason
Former
Statham.
Former DEA guy Jason Statham runs away from his job after a bust gone wrong. He retires himself to... You know, a remote bayou location.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, it's a Nicholas Sparks film.
Well, actually, I was going to say it's a Millennium Films film. Like they are getting every drop of that Louisiana tax credit
they can.
At one point, I was thinking, are we near where Jason Statham lived in The Mechanic?
Yeah, probably. And so his daughter, who has been. Statham trained to take out evildoers. She beats the crap out of a bully at school who is bullying her.
After being very, you know, like...
Very firm and... little girl Jason Statham. She's like, I told him twice to leave me alone.
Yeah, she's like giving him chances to de-escalate and he is not doing it.
And then she like...
Wallops him.
Smashes his face. She's eight. So this in turn makes Crystal Meth Kate Bosworth super mad.
Yes. In the role she was born to play.
She's so good in this movie. Like, I'm kind of in love with her in this film.
She uses her extreme skinny powers.
She's so good at being really skinny.
Yes.
And yelling the F word at children.
She... It, watching her in this movie is as pleasurable as watching Katherine Heigl in The Big Wedding playing someone who's awful. It's like, yeah. Yes, this is what you should have been doing
right.
All along.
Yeah, if you've never given one dang about Kate Bosworth, this is what you will love her in.
Yes.
She is gross and stringy-haired and trashy and full of all bones. She's bones and halter tops. And
so, yeah, totally. She's all clavicle. So she wants revenge, and her useless husband is not providing any because Jason Statham totally
Jason throws, Statham is a man.
Jason throws...
That's all you yeah, have to know.
He throws...
There is a man in this film, and his name is Jason Statham. He throws... Everyone else is... A dummy who gets in the way of Jason Statham.
Exactly. He wrestles the husband down to the asphalt in the parking lot in seconds, so she must turn to her brother, local drug kingpin Gator, played by...
Gator Bodine.
Gator Bodine, thank you. Local drug kingpin Gator Bodine. Now, you're thinking, okay, who would you cast to play a drug kingpin named Gator Bodine in a Jason Statham movie? Who's not doing anything? Who's got 5 free days between movies and installations and soap opera appearances? I know. Let's get James Franco. And what skinny skank could we get to play his untrustworthy meth head girlfriend? Winona Ryder.
She's not skinny compared to Bosworth.
No, she's not Bosworth.
She skinny. Looks like a human being compared to Bosworth. Kate Bosworth looks like a lady skeleton in this movie. Like Pirates of the Caribbean.
Skeletress. Like,
yeah. Just waving swords.
So things happen and it's all complicated and it's then Jason Statham has to beat up everybody, and he does beat up everybody.
Twist the arms heads around and shoot, and the crush kick them, and
they
everything they...
And there is...
Unfortunately, they just keep coming at him because they don't understand that he is the transporter.
Exactly.
And...
they're messing with Crank.
And they wind up losing the fights. I mean, and you know this. You know this going in, and that's that doesn't ruin the pleasure of it. It's not a good movie, but it's certainly not entertaining. Yeah, it's completely fun to watch.
It's a Jason Statham movie.
Yeah. That guy does everything I want him to do exactly the way I want him to do it.
Yes.
And I'm grateful that he exists because someone had to come along and become Stallone and Schwarzenegger.
Right.
And it's his turn.
Yeah.
It's his turn to do that.
And Statham is so indestructible in this movie, they have to trot out a sympathetic black character just so somebody gets shot. Because it's not going to be Jason Statham. Spoiler.
Does he get grazed a little bit at
one
point?
Spoiler, he doesn't die. The sympathetic black character does not die. I was going to be mad if he did. This was a screenplay written by one Sylvester Stallone.
Right, like for himself whenever
clearly.
He wrote it.
In fact, somebody told me that it was written as a Rambo movie originally, and I was like, Rambo doesn't have a daughter in grade school. That doesn't work. But I could totally see where this would have been a Stallone vehicle 20 years ago, 10 years ago.
25 years
ago. 25 years ago. Well, 10 years ago, it wouldn't have been a good one, but it would have existed. You know?
Right.
But it's competently trashy.
Yeah.
Who directed this?
Some dude.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's if you like Jason Statham being Jason Statham is very Jason Statham in this movie.
My favorite thing, I think, in the movie is that he does... When the opening credits, he's so deep undercover. He's got a long mullet.
Yeah.
And he's doing what passes for an American accent from Jason Statham.
Right.
The rest of the film, when he goes off and retires, it is Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. Like, there is no... You know, there is no changing him. And so he shows up in this little Louisiana town. He's like, oi, something else. Like, there's no...
It's like Chris O'Dowd in Bridesmaids. They give him, like, one line to explain why he is in the middle of, you know, Minnesota or wherever it is.
Even though he's Irish.
Yeah. But yeah. Jason Statham...
You never even explain, and no one asks him. No one down at the local, like, the local watering hole alligator wrestling compound says, what's up with that British dude that just moved to town? Like, where'd he come from? Like, here's what should have happened.
Clearly the DEA is lousy with people from Brighton or whatever.
Remember the time, and they do explain it in the credits, that he was former Interpol.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's
and
right,
then
that's
he became right, DEA, right. Like he transferred, like he got a transfer. I don't know what they how that works, but remember, this is a thing that maybe only you and I remember. Remember back in the day on American Idol, when the girl auditioned and was so rotten, and her mother,
what is he, French?
Got so angry at Simon Cowell, she's like, what is he, French? He has to go back to France where he came from.
I remember that.
And someone says, British. And she goes, he needs to go back to British. That was what she said. And I always will remember that lady because I think she expresses the geographical understanding of most people in the United States. And so the idea that no one would have said, where's he from? France? Like... That should have been at least a line of dialogue from some character. Yeah,
make it a joke, something, yeah. But just an acknowledgement.
Like, what's up with the East London dude, you know? Why is he here wearing a baseball cap and a flannel shirt?
In the bayou.
Yeah. With a daughter who speaks...
Perfect English. Perfect American.
Perfect English. American English, yeah. So...
She's not like, daddy.
It's time for my afternoon snack of Marmite on toast.
What? Are there any more chocolate covered hobnobs?
So,
hello.
Anyway, this movie is stupid and
super fun.
Really enjoyed
myself. I had a good time.
I also really enjoyed Black Nativity, which is the next thing we're talking about.
More than I did.
Why don't you tell them about it? Why? What it is and why you didn't like it.
Okay.
Well, I will tell you everyone why you're wrong.
Yeah. This is a movie I admire for what it wants to be and for who made it. It's directed by Casey Lemons, who directed Eve's Bayou, which is, I think, a really great and under-heralded American movie. This is based on a very apparently popular Langston Hughes play that gets performed in black churches all the time, but... It's the kind of movie where I can't imagine what the play even is because the movie is so odd and goes in so many weird directions. And frankly, there are so many references to Langston Hughes in it. Like the lead...
It is as much about Langston Hughes as it is about... As it is by him.
Yeah, like the lead character is this teenage kid named Langston. Yes. And they, you know...
Named after Langston.
Pointedly...
By his mother, Jennifer Hudson.
Jennifer Hudson. Like, it is specifically said, he's named for Langston Hughes. And so the movie begins in Baltimore, and Jennifer Hudson is being evicted from their apartment.
No, from their home. They own a home.
Their home, right?
Foreclosed by their home.
Right. Sorry.
It is explained that she used to work for the city.
State and their city.
She got laid off.
Right.
She couldn't get another job, and the jobs that she did get were like tending bar and stuff like that. Not making ends meet. Not making the mortgage. They are being foreclosed on and kicked out. The bank is taking their home.
She sends him off to live with her estranged parents in Harlem, who are played by Forest Whitaker and Angela Bassett. And there is some reason why their relationship has been...
Non-existent.
There's been a rift.
He doesn't know his grandparents at all.
Yeah, he's never met these people. He doesn't know the family history. The mom won't talk about it. The mom won't accept any help from the parents. So he goes to live with them, and then he gets thrown in jail because this kid steals his bag, and he chases him, and it winds up in this swanky hotel, and he wants to use the phone to call his grandparents because they were supposed to come pick him up at the bus, and they missed each other, and they won't let him use the phone, and this rich white guy leaves his wallet on the desk, and the kid considers stealing it, but then he doesn't, and when he tries to give the wallet back to the rich white guy, they call the cops.
Right.
And so he winds up in a jail cell with Tyrese Gibson.
Yes.
And then later, you know, the granddad bails him out and he runs into Tyrese Gibson again at this pawn shop, and there's shady things afoot, possibly. The grandfather...
Shady things that might become crime things.
Right.
With guns and O. Henry-esque pocket watches.
Yes.
And so,
meanwhile, like, Christmas is coming, and
Forrest Whitaker's... It's not just coming. It's, like, 2 days away.
Yeah, Forrest Whitaker's church is putting on this black nativity show, and there's a homeless pregnant woman and her boyfriend milling about the neighborhood, and then there's a big...
Mary J. Blige. The big
show happens, and Mary J. Blige shows up in a white wig with wings, and the kid falls asleep during the show, which I did not blame him for doing.
Has a dream with some camels, and then there's Nos rapping.
Yeah, it has this whole...
Everyone is singing all the time.
There's a dream that kind of parallels what's actually happening, but isn't, and then Jennifer Hudson... Lots of na-na-na.
I'm super excited by that.
Jennifer Hudson finally shows up. Tell me more about na-na-na. All the secrets are revealed in front of the entire congregation. This is like a Maury Povich moment where, like,
super into that.
Everybody is spilling everything in a microphone in front of an... like, I was waiting for people in the back to be like, woo! You know? and I left out that it's a musical.
It is a musical.
It's a musical that is super random when people start singing and when they stop.
And
sometimes they're sort of integrated into...
You're telling all the good parts.
Well, I'm trying to explain this movie because I'm still trying to figure it out in my head. I don't know what I just saw. Sometimes the musical numbers are very sort of matter-of-fact and presented as though they were realistic. And then other times you get these dream sequences going on. And this movie... I don't know what to make of it.
I'll tell you what to make of it.
You got more out of it than I did, so you explain why.
I'm kind of in love with this movie.
Why?
Because it's crazy. Because I believe that this is in keeping with what Casey Lemons has done in the past. You go back to Eve's Bayou. It's all about, like, it's ostensibly just sort of this film about family secrets, but then there's witchcraft and voodoo involved. And then
from a child's point of view.
The almost nobody saw Caveman's Valentine.
Which I still need to see.
With Sam Jackson as a mentally ill pianist living in a cave who has sex with Anne Magnuson at one point.
And he's got, like, dreads, right?
Yeah. What you have here is Black Nativity commenting on Black Nativity with songs by Raphael Sadiq from Tony.
Mm-hmm. None of which I can remember.
The songs are almost as though people just are talking and then they start singing the dialogue. You know, I've got a kid I can't feed. My house is being taken away from me. I'm going to go to Harlem. And, you know, like, that's...
You're making it sound like the Umbrellas of Cherbourg, and it's not even that
kind
of...
If you ask Raphael Sadiq, he would probably say, I want it to be like Umbrellas of Cherbourg. Because that is the way these songs are. They aren't like catchy pop songs or catchy R&B pop songs. They are songs about the action. And so... there's that. The songs, like you said, they stop and start. They come in at weird moments. They are abandoned quickly. Sometimes they don't finish. Spoken conversations do the same thing. They pop up. They go away. You don't know why. Tyrese all of a sudden starts reciting poetry in the middle of a pawn shop at gunpoint. I finally have seen Tyrese Gibson act.
This film. This is the best work he has ever done.
It's surprising and it's almost moving.
Alongside some of the worst work I've ever seen Angela Bassett do.
She's maybe a little lost in the film. Like, she's very nervous and full of sighs and
fluttery
very fluttery, and you don't know what it is she wants to be. I'll give you that about Angela Bassett. Angela Bassett. One of my favorite actresses. Angela Bassett. Forrest Whitaker, I think, is great.
Forrest Wicker Bassett.
Forrest Wicker Bassett. I think it's super great.
He's interesting. Here's the thing.
I love Jennifer Hudson all the time. When she opens her mouth to sing, she's crying. And when Jennifer Hudson cries, I cry. That is how much I feel for Jennifer Hudson. I don't know that, you know, this film is the perfect example of her power, but she gives it everything she's got every time she opens her mouth to sing, which is a lot. She does more singing than speaking.
Although she's barely in this.
No.
She disappears for a long time.
She disappears for a chunk, but then she pops up, especially during his dream sequence, the son's dream sequence.
Right.
Like, he's singing about what he wants, what's going on in his life, and she shows up because he's dreaming.
I never felt like the son's dramatic...
There are camels... In this film.
I don't feel like the son's dramatic arc has a clear through line as far as, like, what does he want? What's he trying to accomplish? What does he need?
I said there are camels.
Yes, there are
walking
camels.
Walking around.
And when you finally get to the big reveal of why she and the parents
you
aren't
and I
speaking,
disagree over this. Say what you feel about
it. It feels like the kind of thing that would have been more, you know... Back when Langston Hughes wrote this thing in like the 30s or 40s or whatever.
Well, it's still pretty serious stuff.
Coming out of Old Boy, I was expecting a bigger reveal, right. I guess. I don't know.
It's still pretty serious stuff and enough to dissolve a family.
No, I'm not saying it certainly justifies the actions of the daughter, but
yes.
But they make such a big thing about not ever talking about it that you're just, I think they right. set it up to be like a really big.
You're looking for something NC-17.
No, not necessarily.
Horrifying.
Not necessarily, but just something that was just somebody doing something really terrible and not just...
Well, they did do something really
that's
terrible.
That's not good, you know.
Here's the other thing I like about this film. It is steeped in the current, really, because it hasn't always been like this. Black film recently is full of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
It is as though Tyler Perry came along and said, this is how we're going to do this now. We're going to include some reference to church or Jesus in every movie.
Right.
And all the other films that have come after Tyler Perry have said, okay, if that's the formula, I guess we're going to play along. And so this film, obviously, you know, there's a minister as a main character, and right. it's largely set in a church or near a church.
Right.
And it's about Christians doing Christianity badly.
getting it wrong.
They're getting it wrong. And what I appreciated about the film is that the film acknowledges, yeah, these are Christians who are pretty much failing at their own religion. And here's how we have to get through that. And here's how this can be fixed. And so the message of the movie isn't Jesus will fix everything. The message of the movie is Jesus isn't going to fix everything because people are terrible. And people have to go fix that stuff themselves
right.
and give each other the grace and the forgiveness that their religion is founded on.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons I appreciated the sort of like the underpinning of that. You know, underpinning is the wrong word. Undercutting that form
uh-huh.
with a real human message.
I guess here's what kind of bugs me with stuff like this, and it's we've talked about. I'm an atheist. I find some of this stuff kind of weird to deal with. It's one thing
you're weirded out by this stuff in general.
Well,
I know you are.
Yeah, you're
annoyed by its presence.
It's one thing when you get all Jesus-y in a movie like Best Man Holiday, where everybody is
behaving badly.
Well, that. But what I was going to say is that you've got where the characters are of a certain economic status level.
Okay,
you know they're either full on rich.
Everybody
or
in Best
least,
Man Holiday has some money.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
In a movie like this, which is so much about desperation and, you know, hard economic times. I mean, like, it is specifically cited, you know, how bad the economy is and how much people are suffering.
Yes.
To then throw Jesus-y stuff into that context to me just feels like so... That worst sort of opiate of the masses stuff where you tell the impoverished, well, it's okay because after you die, everything's going to be awesome. So
but
it doesn't
no
matter
one in
this
film,
life.
This is, I think, you reading something into the movie. Nobody in the movie is saying your problems will be solved if you just go to church. That's Tyler Perry's job.
Hmm.
He's the one who says that all the time. You'll fix everything if you just go to church.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what this movie is saying. This movie is saying, yeah, everything sucks. But, you know, you do have church, too, where there's at least some comfort to be had among other people who may be suffering just like you, which is why you've got the pregnant teen and her boyfriend in the in the church, you know, they don't have anywhere to go. They live on the street, but they go to the church because they know at least that there's, it's a warm building.
Yeah.
And obviously they are meant to be Mary and Joseph.
Yeah, which they become in the dream sequence. Yeah,
and so...
I think ultimately what bugs me about this movie, it just feels so muddled. I mean, just trying to play it back in my head, I can't even connect the dots. It feels so thrown together and let's try this. And I didn't come out of it with any sense of a whole, of a vision that anybody had. It really just felt like, let's just try all this stuff. And it's not, it goes off in weird directions. It has all these... No one has trimmed the loose ends. It's just all over the place.
I think Casey Lemons is interested in the supernatural and also in being skeptical of the supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
And so I appreciate her willingness to even try that, because I really think that sort of stuff, that sort of content in American film, just no one even wants to try that. This is a daring, ambitious, messy movie. I don't think it's muddled, and I would like to draw the distinction between muddled and messy.
Fair enough. I agree. So, this is a movie that wants to do things. I mean, it's
Spike Lee does this a lot too in his very personal kinds of films, like Red Hook Summer, that we just talked about.
Right.
Also, messy movie.
Very much so.
But I loved it.
I did not.
And I really like that. I really like that within this context, you know, you've got people who are willing to risk their ability to get funding for their next movie by being weird.
And that she got away with it in a movie that is being produced by T.D. Jakes.
And Trudy Styler. So it's not like it's not like T.D. Jakes is calling all the shots.
I suppose not.
Sting's wife is on board.
Fresh from her 8-hour orgasm.
Mrs. Sting has something to say here.
No, they clearly gave Casey Lemons her head on this one.
Please do go see this movie. It's weird.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't like it, but I would say it's worth looking at if you're interested in this director, if you're interested in just people trying something. I mean, yeah. I totally give her points for trying.
Mary J. Blige is in this movie.
And Mary J. Blige is in it with a white wig and wings.
She sings. Mary J. Blige is in a movie singing. I'll tell you something. That's enough to make you want to go see I Can Do Battle by Myself.
True.
Because her 5 minutes of singing the title song is devastating. And it makes the rest of the movie not smell so much like a giant turd by comparison.
I don't know.
Forest Whitaker sings more than Mary J. Blige in this film still is freaking me out.
I think I went in with higher expectations just because I love Eve's Bayou so much, and I am generally a fan of Langston Hughes. I honestly want to go back and read what his version is, because it can't be this.
There's got to be a church in town doing Black probably. Nativity.
It can't Let's be this. Find it. It can't be this crazy. His version of it.
Would you burn into a crisp if you walked into a church?
No.
You wouldn't? You sure?
You have seen me attend weddings of my relatives.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. You did, didn't you?
I honestly have no idea what the source material is even like, because this movie is so crazy. And there's no way that what they do in this movie is the thing that churches do every year, because it's too nuts.
Yeah. I'm down. For this movie.
It's your kind of thing.
I saw The Punk Singer.
Right, which I did not.
I'm going to write a review of it for our site.
Okay.
I'm actually kind of halfway done with it.
All right, so people can be on the lookout for that this week.
It's terrific. It is a documentary about Kathleen Hanna.
All right, don't give away too much.
Well, I'm just telling them what it's about.
Fine.
She was the lead singer of Bikini Kill, one of the best punk rock bands of the early 90s. Co-founder of the entire Riot Girl movement. Funny and smart and provocative and angry and willing to be contradictory in public. And she did this at a very young age. She was in her early 20s, in the early 90s. She's 45 now. She has been married to Adam Horvitz of the Beastie Boys for about 10 years. They've been together since 97, but they've been married for almost 10 years. And the film is about her and what happened to her after Bikini Kill and after La Tigra, why she sort of stopped performing. And what you find out is that she got very, very sick. Oh. And even she didn't understand what was going on with her. But and the film is actually where you find out what really did go on with her, where the sort of announcement about her illness takes place. Hmm. It's a short little movie. It's 80 minutes long. It's inspiring and funny and full of, punk rock memories for me, because I, was around then. And I was coming out at that time. Like, I was doing all my coming out in the early 90s. And so while Riot Girl didn't, specifically address me, it did address the kind of stuff that people who are marginalized go through. And so I was very interested in it as a form, because not only was Bikini Kill a great, loud, obnoxious, snotty sounding band, but they said things that other bands just didn't say. And punk rock was dominated by straight guys, with few exceptions. The 80s and alternative music was more or less dominated by straight guys. And so to have them come along and to be so in your face opposite those things was really wonderful. They were great.
Did you get out of the mosh pit?
When she told me to, I did. I saw them. She did the same thing in every show. Mm-hmm. And there's a book called Girls to the Front. It's a book about this whole thing. And that's what she would say. She'd say, all you big effing dudes, guys, get to the back. Be cool for once in your lives and let the girls come to the front. Stay out of the pit. Let the girls be in the front. And I was like, I will do whatever you tell me to do. You are 4 feet tall. I outweigh you by 200 pounds. I will still obey you. Because I'm afraid of you. And here's the thing. I know, like, Kathleen Hanna would look at a guy like me and just be like, ugh, another dumb lug at my show. And maybe would not realize this is a gay dude who's a, who's a punk rock gay dude who...
And a lug.
Who is... Who is identifying with a lot of aspects of this music in a way that other guys are not.
Right.
But that's okay. That didn't offend me. That didn't offend me to be like, lumped in with the morons.
Sure.
And the people who, beat up people at shows. I just thought she was so great. I was like, I will do anything you tell me to do. You're Kathleen Hanna.
So people can terrific. Go. So go to linoleum-knife.com.
This week, it's going up like Monday or whatever. We've been having... this weekend, I tried to post stuff, and things are being glitchy. I had to get Andy, our site guy, Andy, to help us with this. That's it.
Yep. What's your DVD pick?
TCM, all month long, is showing Robert Bresson films.
Oh, boy.
It's the most Bressoniest time of the year.
I'm dreaming of a gray.
You are going to watch all of these films with me. I am the Krampus of Christmas.
I just want to watch Scrooge.
I'm the Krampus of cinema. And you are going to watch Mouchette.
Can we put
and
them
in? You are going to watch The Diary of a Country Priest and Pickpocket and Le Procès de Jeanne d'Arc. And O Hussar Balthasar, the greatest film ever made. This is going to be such a wonderful Christmas for me and for you.
Can we put these in TiVo until January?
Everybody listening to this show needs to watch all five of these films on Turner Classic Movies this year. Those are my DVD picks for the month.
Can we wait for
Diary of a Country Priest is this weekend. Right now, it's happening.
I'll post the link to our Facebook page. Can we save these in TiVo until January?
Maybe.
Because I want December to be about joyous Christmas times.
I'll decide what's best for you. Yeah. I think you should just let me shape your existence.
Is that what you think?
Yes.
That's fascinating. My DVD pick is a joyous Christmas movie, one of my favorites that is featured in my book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, coming out this week in its Blu-ray debut, because luckily enough people voted for it when Fox surveyed DVD customers. Desk Sets.
Woohoo!
The 1950s Spencer Tracy, Katharine Hepburn comedy about electronic brains.
Can we just watch that tonight?
I'm down.
Like, sure. It's almost dinner time.
Yeah.
After dinner time,
mm-hmm.
We're both tired from flying in the plane and being away in Albuquerque and stuff.
Let's watch Desk Sets.
I've got the pot. I've got the mushroom ravioli over there. Mm-hmm. That's dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Let's watch Desk Set.
Great. I'm in.
I think this is a great idea.
I love Desk Set.
You guys should be watching Desk Set,
and it's
too.
Now, it's now in high def on Blu-ray, so get it. Letters.
Hello, Dave and Alonzo. Greetings from Melbourne, Australia. I'm a new listener to the podcast. I decided to check it out after watching the What the Flick show.
Yay!
So you, that it drew people.
Yeah, see, we get listeners from that show. That show gets viewers from this show. It's all a thing.
I listened to your latest podcast about Christian movies and thought I'd share another genre of Christian movie you may not be aware of, African Christian movies, specifically Nigerian ones.
Mm.
They are sometimes an insane mix of religious themes, Nigerian voodoo, and witchcraft meant to scare the wayward, aka free-thinking, populace back into the arms of the church. I have posted a YouTube link to give you a little snippet of one of the many classics called End of the Wicked.
Ooh.
Watch it and let your mind go blank with bewilderment. Hope I have not oversold it. Check it out and let me know. P.S. How do I know about this, you ask? Well, I am part Nigerian. Hope this mail is not too long. Cheers, Sola. Thank you, Sola.
Yay, we're going to post that clip on our Facebook page as well, Linoleum Knife Podcast. Go check it out. Yeah, I'm always intrigued to see new
crazy stuff.
Yes, pretty much.
Hi, guys. On the podcast, you were asking for Christmas movie lists,
yes.
And I thought that I'd share my holiday favorites.
Great.
Re-looking it over, it seems like it may be trying too hard to be offbeat, but really, all of these movies are annual delights for me. I only explain to the movies that seem like they may not be a Christmas movie at first glance. Take a look and see what you think. Number one, Gremlins.
Sure.
Number two, Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is not a Christmas movie per se, but
it counts
as it is set at Christmas, frequently has Christmas presents and parties, and is about the consumption that Western Christmas is defined by, plus it is an awesome movie.
Also, there is the boss in the Santa outfit.
Yeah. Three, The Ref. Four,
Heck, yeah.
A Christmas Story, of mm-hmm. course. Five, Tales from the Crypt, the All Through the House segment, Joan Collins
yes.
killing her husband and being killed by Santa Claus.
Yes!
The Ice Harvest.
Mm-hmm.
National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Sure.
The War of the Roses, the epic tale of destruction of family, has frequent significant scenes set at Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Go!
Mm-hmm.
It does capture the feeling of being on your own at the holidays.
True.
10. Jack Frost, 1997. Okay, so this is really more about winter than Christmas, but if Frosty the Snowman is Christmas, then Jack Frost is too. Also, this is the killer snowman movie, not the Michael Keaton one. Honorable mention, Christmas Evil.
Mm-hmm.
Dishonorable mention, A Christmas Puppy. I don't even know what this is.
Yeah, that I gotta find.
It's hard not to get behind a movie where some kid trespasses on a stranger's house and is embraced after he redecorates their tree. Knife It. I know you'll probably be harsh on it, especially since only one-third of the films are actual Christmas films. P.S. Upon rewatching Jack Frost, which I hadn't seen in a while because I had it on VHS and my VCR is defunct, okay, it totally is a Christmas movie. Thanks. This is from Chris Coronado, who has a blog called The Other Films.
Okay. Well,
Chris, and we should post a link to his blog
sure.
on the Facebook page.
I have news for you, Chris Coronado. Those are all Christmas movies. We are not going to knife you about them not being Christmas movies because clearly
they are all 100% knife via Christmas.
You have not read
clearly
my
have not.
Book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, because except for War of the Roses, which does have Christmas scenes, but I didn't include it in the main text. All of those books, all of those films are covered in my book. Those are totally Christmas movies. You are correct, sir.
Everybody should buy Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. Here's the commercial.
Yes.
I'm going to do the commercial.
Sponsored by us.
Everybody needs to go buy Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. You can buy it on anywhere on the websites that exist to sell books. Amazon. And
it's a Kindle.
A Libris. It's available on Kindle. If you would like your own personal copy, signed by the author, decorated with Christmas items between the pages, and gift wrapped, you will pay full retail plus shipping. That's $20. $20 to us.
Within the U.S.
Within the U.S. If you live in some other country, It's going to cost a hell of a lot more to ship it to you.
No, well, it depends.
At least double the shipping cost.
Well, yeah, okay.
And sometimes even more. Like it,
shipping to Canada is not going to cost as much as shipping to Australia.
It costs like $10 to send a book to England.
Okay, but it's only like sort of $3 if you're in Canada.
Because we just sent one to England.
Yes.
And it's like $10 to send to England. Anyway, yeah, buy it. You've got a little bit of time before Christmas if you want to read it and catch up on some movies. If you buy it all the way through the month of December, you've got all of 2014.
To prep for next year.
To prepare and to schedule all of your viewing.
That's right. And yeah, and so...
Chris, and I'm not just a co-benefactor, you know, a co-recipient of your cash. I believe in this book. I like this book.
Thank you.
First of all, it's dedicated to me.
That's true. Well, co.
Who else?
My mother.
Okay, sure. sure, yeah, yeah, your mother. It's dedicated to me. This is why I like it. I also like it because I'm fully on board with every film in this book except for the Harry Potter one, which we've had many, many arguments about.
Yule Ball.
Yeah, sure. Yule Ball. But yeah, this is a really great, I think it's a really great book. I think it's smarter and more factually correct than almost every other Christmas movie book I've ever seen. And we have seen a few.
There's a handful of them out there, but they tend to stick to the tried and true.
They do.
And I got tried and true in there, but I also have...
Untried and false.
I also have I have movies like Go and movies like Brazil and Eyes Wide Shut and, you know, The Lion in Winter and Die Hard and all the...
Arnaud Desplechin's A Christmas Tale and 1959's Santa Claus.
And My Night at Maud's.
And My Night at Maud's, yeah, exactly.
So yeah, it's a whole mess of different kind of stuff in there. It's a fun read, I think, and people tell
buy
me,
it.
People tell me they discovered buy things they it. Didn't know about. So
buy
anyway,
it as a gift for your friends, your family, for yourself, buy it.
So drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We'll tell you how to
give us all your money.
Yes, exactly. And
if you have already ordered it and you haven't received it yet, that's because we've been
out of town for Thanksgiving.
Out of town, and so
this week they all
they're all going out Monday.
Yes.
They're all going out Monday.
Also, this week, we will be ordering the Linoleum Knife t-shirt.
Yes. So if you pre-ordered a Linoleum Knife t-shirt, you're going to get it soon. By the end of December, you'll get it.
And we are still taking orders. It's a very snappy shirt.
We've got pretty much all the more or less, maybe we're a few shy of 20. I don't know. But we've got all the pre-orders I think we need to order the batch.
Yeah.
And so...
and even if we don't, we're ordering them anyway.
We're ordering them anyway.
But yeah, so it's very snappy, black letters, white letters on black shirt. It's a Hanes 100% cotton tagless. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We'll tell you how to order them. They're $20 also within the U.S. And
we have one more letter.
They're snappy. You'll love it.
One more letter is from Alex. This is his top 10 Christmas movies list.
Oh, great.
He wants it knifed.
Okay.
I'm just telling him right now, you've already got 100% knife because every movie in this list is good and it's in your book. It's in the book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Awesome.
Here they go. Number one, A Christmas Story.
Sure.
Number two, A Christmas Carol. He doesn't say which one.
No. They're all lovely.
Three, Love Actually.
Sure.
Number four, Die Hard.
Yeah.
Number five, Joyeux Noël.
Mm.
Number six, Miracle on 34th Street. Number seven, The Muppet Christmas Carol. Mm. Number eight, Bad Santa. Number nine, It's a Wonderful Life. Number 10, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Okay.
100% knife.
Yes.
Christmas knife.
It's a solid list.
Oh, holy knife.
We stab you with a stake of holly, 100%.
You'll be buried with a stake of holly in your heart.
That's right.
A sprig of holly.
Boiled with your own pudding.
Right.
Okay, so as always, we thank you for listening. Check out our friends all over the internet, ChristyLemire.com. You go to Sirius XM for the Rotten Tomatoes show twice a week. I will be appearing on the Rotten Tomatoes show on Thursday, December 12th, just in time to talk about A Medea Christmas.
You're going to be on the Stephanie Miller show this week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. If you listen to the Stephanie Miller show, which is syndicated throughout the country, and it airs here in Los Angeles on KTLK, but it also, you can get it on iHeartRadio, and I'm sure there's tons of places to hear it online. I will be on this Friday, December 6th, I think in the, I forget which hour I'll be on during the show to talk about Christmas movies for progressives. So that's going to be fun. Please tune in for that. You laugh. It's going to be good.
No, I know it'll be good. I just think it's the Christmas movies for progressives. It's a funny.
It's an idea I've been kicking around for a while.
It's funny.
It'll be fun. It'll be cool to talk about with them. Also on SiriusXM, check out the Frank DeCaro Show and Derek and Romaine. And in the podcast universe, don't forget the Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Throwing Shade,
The Lunch with James Rocky.
I'm getting to that.
You don't always.
I say it. I say it every week.
Do you?
Well, you stop listening by then. Team Jack, if he ever does a new episode, who the heck knows? The Schmoes Know, the B Movies Podcast, Film Spotting, SVU, Podcrash, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid.
Did I tell you we got another anti Jack?
Really?
Message. We gotta have him back on.
Clearly. He generates mail, if nothing else.
He's the most controversial person we've ever had on the show.
Yeah. Apparently so. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and please leave us a review there. The more good reviews we get, the better placement we get on their homepage. You can stream the show at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com or on a handy app at our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast.
Yep.
You can go there, check it out, and like us. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can follow me at A. Duraldi and at D. Leland White for my co-host there. You can check into the show at GetGlue.com. Write us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com if you're interested in buying a book, buying a t-shirt, if you want to leave us your top 10 Christmas movie list or your worst 10, or any questions or comments about the show. And before I forget, also speaking of Turner Classic Movies, they are rerunning A Night at the Movies. Merry Christmas on the morning of Sunday, December 15th. I think it's 11:15 a.m. Eastern, 8:15 a.m. Pacific.
You can thrill check to your giant pumpkin head on television.
That's right. You can see me on TV in a snappy red Argyle sweater talking about Christmas movies. So do tune in for that. And as always, we thank you for listening, and we will catch you next time.
Goodbye.